Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my very special guest, Monica Unglis, former member of UPCI and ACOP Pentecostal organizations. Monica, it's good to have you on. We have been communicating for, I don't know, 1-2 years, maybe longer, with your research into Pentecostalism, Branhamism, and Jim Jones. And in fact, I did not tell you this before we recorded, but I went down paths of research that I probably would not have gone had it not been for your emails about Jones and his singing group and his involvement in all of this. It led me to Nathaniel Urshan, who was big into Pentecostalism, a UPCI guy, and his connection to Jones, Branham, and this inner circle. So much to talk about. Maybe if we could begin by letting you tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you very much, John. It's an honor to be here, and thank you so much for the invitation. I'm a fourth generation Pentecostal. I was born into it in the 60s, and I listened to your podcast originally under that lens, under the UPCI and the ACOP, and the PAOC lens as well, just because of my family history with it. And when I listened to your podcast, I missed a lot of key information, who was doing what and where they were coming from. And I knew that there was a connection somehow. I just couldn't place it. And it wasn't until just very recently, within the last month or so, that I realized that there was very large William Branham ties to my ACOP church, specifically my downtown Calgary Full Gospel Church.
Absolutely. And I get contacted from several Pentecostal people, some who are quite unhappy with me, and others who are open to learning the true history as it was recorded. So I get all kinds of different types of feedback. But the thing that I'm learning from a lot of people is that there were so many different connections to either Branham, Jones, Branham's mentor, Roy Davis, basically Branham's inner circle, into all aspects of Pentecostalism that it's almost impossible to even trace, because many of those branches have now started to try to erase those roots, since the men are very sinister men I'm talking about. In fact, I have on my screen, which I can't talk about, but I have an email now from a person who's very unhappy that William Branham's mentor, Roy Davis, was working so closely, apparently, with the Church of God. And so I'm having to respond with all of the different research that we found, that which is unquestionable research. And like you said, there are these connections. And how do you dig into this? What is your strategy when you're going into some of your research in Canada? Where do you begin with all of this tangled spiderweb of research?
Well, I'm not really a researcher. I'm more of just a learner. And what I've learned is that we have lost our history. When I spoke with my husband, no clue who William Branham was. I spoke with my parents, no clue who William Branham was, never really even heard of the Latter Rain. And we went to a Latter Rain church, officially, technically, if you wanted to look at it that way. But we never even heard of the person. And talking with my folks about the different doctrines, well, yes, my parents have heard serpent seed being preached, and my dad walked out of the service. My grandparents on my dad's side went to a Latter Rain meeting and walked out of the service. And that was the only real Latter Rain information that I knew about. But then in your podcast, you talked about Trossachs Camp in Saskatchewan. And that's like, oh, well, they're affiliated with us. And I remember Pastor Charles saying once time, if you're in a full gospel church, you're in the Latter Rain denomination. And I'm thinking, oh, there must be full gospel churches everywhere. They can't all be part of the same denomination because lots of churches have the same names. And then reading your books and listening to your podcast, it's like, oh, Pastor Kosick, which was my husband's and my parents' pastor, invited William Branham to our church.
So many connections. You know, I honestly, whenever Charles said that, I didn't fully believe it, even though I had done some research. But I started going back through the newspapers, and pretty much any time that you saw that phrase, full gospel, after 1947, they were usually affiliated with, it, maybe not Latter Rain, but at least with the broader world post-World War II healing revival, of which William Branham was the foremost leader, according to many historical accounts. Now, if you go back before this, you're going to find advertising, we believe in the full gospel, but it didn't quite mean the same exact thing as it did after Latter Rain. So I started reevaluating, and that's part of what led me into some of the research that, combined with what you had sent me, I was digging into Jim Jones and all of his historical background, and the Assemblies of God had, like you said, some of the history just doesn't exist anymore. I'm not going to say why they chose to remove it, but clearly it's not there. But Jim Jones was working with the Assemblies of God up until the Assemblies denounced Latter Rain, and then the whole thing split. Well, Jones picked the Latter Rain, the Branham side of the split, and part of the Assemblies took the other side. And then the question was raised, well, yes, that happened. Did he know William Branham? And then lo and behold, we came across all of the correspondence between Joseph Matson-Bose and William Branham that was introducing Jones to Branham. So you find these clear evidence trails, and you have to ask the question, yes, the evidence exists. Why do the histories not exist? What is happening that would cause people to remove their own history?
Well, that's a really good question. And it's been lost. When the Jonestown incident happened, I remember my parents being very invested in those news reports. And in the early 80s, there was a made-for-TV movie about it that we had to watch because my parents couldn't get enough of that information. Anecdotally, they said that their uncle, who was a pastor in the ACOP church, said that it was the real Jim Jones, but I haven't been able to lock that down.
Yeah, I still am in the process of trying to lock all of this down. And Jones is just one of many figures that it's really the same thing. What you find is there was this band of men who were, and women, who were very, what's the word? They were riding the wave of a theme that was quite popular, yet quite extreme. I think that's the best way to say it. So during that era, whenever this form of extremism was growing in popularity, it was okay. People, you know, even though they were a little bit hesitant and skeptical, they were accepting of it. But then once it was all kind of outed, basically over this serpent seed thing, that was the drawing line in the sand whenever it was very clear that this was a Christian identity theme that they were pushing. Once that happened, then you find hundreds of ministers and evangelists who are standing up and saying, no, we want no part of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting, especially when you look at the historical Pentecostal groups were very white.
So that leads me to one of the other things that you had sent me. You had, in the past, sent me this article of Jim Jones, who was singing in this, I think it was a quartet or a trio, and they were going around to Pentecostal churches, mostly, from what I could tell, mostly Assemblies of God churches, but I do believe that there were some UPCI or at least something affiliated with UPCI, and they became somewhat famous, or what's the word? Not widely famous, but respected within the community, I think is the way to say it. And I was trying to pinpoint, at your request, did Jones go to your specific church, which I never was able to prove that. Some of the band members were swapping in and out, so there's no way to say, was he there at that exact time? But at minimum, it looks like it's plausible. He probably did. We just can't find evidence to support it. But what it gave me was the broader aspect of this. Jones was becoming influential in circles that weren't even, I would say, hardcore Latter Rain circles. It was going beyond through his music ministry and through his youth ministry, which is something that is confirmed quite a bit in the book The Raven. It talks about how Jones was working with the young people and how it wasn't a competition, but it was a growing theme, like Billy Graham's Youth for Christ, where they were targeting the youth and they were starting to spread the global mission of spreading Christianity. Well, Jones was involved with this from the youth perspective, and it seemed to be quite popular among the Pentecostals.
Well, if I were to believe my parents, and they were at the first youth camp at the UPCI Outlet Camp. That should have been 1954. And pastors Nathaniel Urshan and his wife Jean came up to that meeting. They had their baby with them, so we know what time frame that was. And that's when that Harvester trio came up with them and drove up with them from Indianapolis to our camp. And the folks say that Jim Jones was the musical entertainment for the youth camp, but they also claim that he was a youth pastor under Urshan in Indianapolis. And that's what they believe, and that's what they have always believed.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I have done some research into Urshan, and I have been in indirect contact with some of his descendants. And as you know, the Urshan family are quite big into the Pentecostal, in this region, into Pentecostalism. So it's something I'm treading a little bit carefully, because I don't want to make an association that isn't there. But from everything that you have sent and everything that I can find on the research and the newspapers, it looks very plausible that that was happening. I did talk to a person who was in one of Nathaniel Urshan's, apparently he held these conventions years later after Branham's death, and he was talking very favorably of William Branham. So it leads me to believe that there's more here going on than meets the eye. But again, I'm trying to connect the dots historically, and it's a little bit difficult when everybody erases their history.
Mm-hmm. Now, my maternal grandmother had an uncle, and his name was Uncle Clarence Cross, and he was a contemporary of Andrew Urshan and Nathaniel Urshan and Howard Goss. Just because my uncle was one of the first Pentecostal pastors in Ontario, joining in the movement, they say 1905, but that was where the family came out of the holiness movement, because they were holiness pastors under Ralph Horner. They were Hornerites. And after the Hornerite split, we were in the Standard Church, which is also another Hornerite branch.
And that's also interesting, because Howard Goss is he's a respected figure in Pentecostalism, but he was in the South, in a region during this era when the blacks were being oppressed. And some of my research recently into the Assemblies of God places him within the movement whenever it was split black versus white, and new denominations were formed. So I'm still piecing all of that history together. I'm working with a Pentecostal historian for that, and his research is a little bit suggestive of the racial aspects of the early Pentecostals. But I'm treading very cautiously, because there was this North and South split in Pentecostalism. In the South, you had a lot of people who that was just the culture, and it was a different era. I want to rightly separate what was culture and era versus what was agenda and what was just completely wrong. So I have my work cut out for me, but it is quite a bit to go through.
Well, from what I've learned about Pentecostal history in general, Howard Goss was involved in the 1914 formation of the Assemblies of God. And he was also involved in the 1919 formation of the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada. And that's where my uncle Clarence comes in, because he was also part of the 1919 formation of the PAOC. And then in 1921, there was a split in the PAOC between the Trinitarians and the Oneness, and the Oneness formed the ACOP under Reverend Franklin Small. And my uncle Clarence, he was involved in that. He was a signer in that formation as well. And I'm not sure exactly when Uncle Clarence left the ACOP, because he was a UPCI pastor and teacher at the Bible school for a really long time. Howard Goss was the pastor at my church in Ontario, at the Brockville Tabernacle. He was there from 1937 to 1939. And then in 1939, Uncle Clarence came and pastored the Brockville Tabernacle for about 20 years. He married my parents. He married my grandparents. Uncle Clarence passed away when I was 2 years old. I don't really know him, but he was well loved in the family, a very humble man who lived a simple farm life.
You know, that reminds me a lot of my grandfather. And that's one of the more difficult things that I have to work through. There are many really, really good people within Pentecostalism, even in the histories we're talking about, some of them who are mixed in with bad agendas, but yet at the same time, they were a complex person. I think that's the best way to say it. In that complex makeup of their person, they were involved with something in some cases that was very bad, while they were at the same time trying to do something very good, which was something that I was trying to detangle whenever you were contacting me about Jones. Jones was well respected and even received awards for working with the African American communities, helping the poor, a lot of different agendas that he had that were really, really good. So during that era, you would not have placed him in the category of working with some of the more sinister figures in my research, but at the same time, he was. So you have to separate what was the person, what was the agenda, and what were the theologies and the political ideologies that were influencing them.
I don't know if Uncle Clarence would have had political ideologies. He was just a teenager when he got involved in all of this, and he was 22 years old when our uncle Alexander McCrady up and left. They shook hands. They had a disagreement on doctrine, and Uncle Alexander left Uncle Clarence in charge of half the denomination, because the congregation split in the Sand Bay Lansdowne area. So Uncle Clarence was just 22 years old, taking over a congregation.
And that's the other thing too. There's this theme that is starting to emerge among many people like myself, where you're seeing something that just clearly doesn't match the Bible. In many cases, it's heresy, and so it leads to a lot of people becoming heresy hunters, and I try to avoid that label as much as I can. There's this weird problem, though. In Pentecostalism, there wasn't the overarching need of having somebody who was trained in Bible history, Bible text, scholarly understanding of the Bible. In fact, it was somewhat taboo among Pentecostals. So therefore, it opened the doors for people who were I started to use the word underage, which isn't correct. They were underdeveloped in their skills of understanding the Bible. I think that's the best way to put it. And you even had some youngsters who were like 7 years old, 13 years old, who were preaching the gospel, which is fine. They can do that. But there's this fine line between what is preaching out of excitement and what is solid teaching that matches what the Bible says. And it seems that when you invite everybody in that type of mentality, where we're just going to snub anybody who has scholarly understanding of the Bible, it opens the doors for just horrendous things to emerge in the church.
Well, that's very interesting because there has always been Bible schools to teach pastors. There is the PAOC Bible School. What did you call it? BBI, the Bethel Bible Institute in Star City, Saskatchewan. So that was a training school for pastors. We've got the Full Gospel Bible Institute that used to be in Eston, Saskatchewan. That's where my husband went initially. He went on to further Bible school and got his a bachelor's in theology. So I really have a hard time with pastors that don't have, you know, original languages.
I'm starting to have that same hard time. The funny part is, it's not just Pentecostalism that shares this issue. Sometimes you can go into mainstream denominations and they'll have the same thing, because there is an excitement to helping the youth become charged and excited about sharing the gospel. So there is this fine line you have to walk, but for me, I'm looking at the fruits of some of the bad teaching, and you can trace it right back to some of these people who just had no clue what was in the Bible.
Well, from what I see, the UPCI was sheltered themselves from William Branham. I see back in 1999, Pastor Bernard wrote a book about Pentecostal denomination history. And he wrote about the latter rain and how it was rejected. And that's really good. However, in the ACOP group, this is where I remember Charles saying that somebody was the big tent. Oh boy, John, that big tent was key words for me and didn't know it at the time. So going back to my husband's family history, so a little bit about history for me. I was born and raised into the UPCI, but then we moved across Canada, and we were looking for a Pentecostal church in the city that we were moving to, and our ACOP uncle suggested the Downtown Full Gospel Church because they were ACOP. Okay, great. Had no idea that the downtown church was anything other than ACOP, because that's what we were familiar with. We had no idea that it wasn't ACOP originally. It was Full Gospel Missions under the Evangelical Church of Pentecost. We call it the ECOP. So when I think you and Charles had said the ECP, so it didn't click on me, because that wasn't the verbiage that we use.
Yeah, and it's difficult for me. Pentecostalism is like this big pane of glass that's being carried across the street and somebody smashes with a hammer. It just splinters into all of these different groups, and how do you keep track of them all? I know some of the big acronyms that relate to my research, but where it went beyond there, it's really difficult. So we got a few things wrong.
Right. And listening to your first podcast, or the first time listening to your podcast, I missed this. So we've got in 1927, the ECOP forms. And in 1932, we've got Trossachs Camp. That's all the ECOP people. And then we've got 1935, we've got George Houghton and Percy Hunt at the PAOC Seminary at the BBI, which is now called Horizons College and Seminary.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we've got Ern Baxter joining the ECP in 1943. Okay, and so in 1944, our Bible school opens, John, the Full Gospel Bible Institute. That's where I should have gone after graduating high school. I personally chose not to, for two reasons. They're going to sound silly now. One, I didn't want to learn the piano, and two, I didn't want to be a pastor's wife.
You know, the names you mentioned, obviously, for those who don't know and aren't aware, Ern Baxter was William Branham's partner in the Latter Rain Revivals. Where it gets interesting is the way Branham describes it. He later come in contact with Ern Baxter, but some of the research that we have puts that into question. Branham's backstory isn't correct. In fact, in Branhamism, just like some of the other groups we've been researching, some of that history has been erased, and in Branham's case, it seems to be purposefully. Some of the other groups, I don't know, maybe they just are unaware, but Ernest Baxter was a Pentecostal who was right in the vicinity of where Branham was having his strongest area of influence in the late 40s. But we have traced Branham back to one of the acronyms, the PCI. We've traced Branham to working with the PCI before Branham was supposed to have even received his alleged commission to go heal, pray for the sick. And through some of the research that I've been doing with John McKinnon, going back to the weaponized religion series that we do on the podcast, we have traced, it seems that Branham was working with Pentecostals as early as the late 20s. So how widespread was his influence? I don't know. It's really hard to say. But he was working under Roy Davis as apparently a bishop in Davis's Pentecostal sect, which was the Pentecostal Baptist Church of God, PCBOG, if you want to throw acronyms out. And Davis had influence from California all the way to Georgia, so, and parts of Cleveland, Tennessee, which is part of the email that I'm writing right now. So you've got this wide path of potential influence, and you've got the years late 1920s. So did Ernest Baxter already know him? I don't know. There's a very good chance he did know Davis, or at least had heard of Davis, but we can't prove that because there's really no registry of history. But then you bring into the other names that you've mentioned, Ern Houghton, Percy Hunt. These were big into the Sharon Orphanage, and there's clear evidence, fully documented evidence, that Houghton was part of the Christian Identity theology movement. So when you bring that to what you have, now you're bringing Christian Identity, Pentecostalism, Branhamism, Full Gospelism, all of these different streams merging and converging where you're talking about.
Yes, and let's not forget the Ersham Branham revival healing tours.
Yes.
Where Branham was working with the head of the UPCI, Ersham, before it was the UPCI, and Branham was also working with W.E. Kidson, who was also a head of the UPCI in some capacity.
Exactly. And he would have been the PCI connection that I was talking about. In fact, not many people know this history. We've published some of it, but when Branham was working with Kidson, he was writing for Kidson's newsletter as an editor, and the later story that Branham gave was that he was uneducated, so he would not have been a writer. And the column that was in the newsletter that Kidson was publishing was, there's a column entitled The Voice of Healing. That later became William Branham's Voice of Healing magazine, which was later taken over by Gordon Lindsay.
Yeah, and here I'm going to show you something, John. Here is a hymnal that was on my mom's piano. And if you look inside, compiled by A.D. Gurley and W.E. Kidson.
Wow.
And we have here copyright 1934, Herald Publishing House in Dallas, Texas. And it is the Stamps Baxter Music Company. So that was really quite interesting. My father-in-law has listened to the Stamps Quartet forever, because he came out of the ECP before they merged into the ACOP.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
So you mentioned the Stamps Quartet. In my research of William Branham's mentor, Roy Davis, as I mentioned, Davis was well known from coast to coast. And there was a point in time in California whenever, interestingly, according to the timeline, as the California Ku Klux Klan was being rebirthed, he, who was the former head of the Ku Klux Klan, Ahad, was in California building a church, building a movement, and who knows what all else. But he was also the MC of a statewide quartet convention. And in it, it mentioned several names, some of which were a little bit curious whenever I started going into it. But it said that, and the verbiage sounds like he was part of the original Stamps Quartet from Texas. And so I started researching that because I was a big fan of J.D. Sumner and the Stamps, which would have been a later iteration of the Stamps. I have not yet found any proof to overthrow that claim. Whether he was in it or not, I don't know. But at minimum, he was touring around with people who were connected to the Stamps Quartet. So you got Stamps Baxter, which interestingly, the name Baxter, I don't think it's the same as Earn Baxter, but the coincidence is kind of funny. And right there in your hymnal, it's bringing all of these connections together.
Well, I just find it very interesting that they say that Roy Davis was an original Stamps member from, 1924 to 1945 when he left. So I have a hard time imagining that in 21 years, nobody knew.
Yeah, I do too. The first thought that hit me was maybe it's a different Stamps Quartet. But what it's describing, if I'm understanding the history of the Stamps Quartet, it is describing the correct one as it evolved into the J.D. Sumner version of the Stamps. J.D. Sumner and the Stamps were the opening act before some of the Elvis concerts, which is also kind of interesting.
Well, to talk about the other Baxter, Earn Baxter, who was not part of the Baxter Stamps Quartet, Earn Baxter ended up being a pretty big name in the ACOP. He was a big ECOP leader at the time of when they merged. And I have found pictures of Earn Baxter in the ACOP's official End Times magazine, End Times Messenger magazine. And I nearly fell off my chair, John. You see Earn Baxter sitting two doors down from my pastor. And then there's other people in this group, and it's like, these are all the Saskatchewan people.
Well, take it a step further. I was so shocked when I started working with people in the charismatic movement who started saying many of the same things. Oh, that's the same Earn Baxter that started the shepherding movement. Our church was connected to the shepherding. And I started going through all of the history of the spider web of where all of this went. And like Branhamism, you go to the ends where the fruit starts to be produced, and it's not really good fruit that's produced by these people. Now, they may not have had bad intentions, but whenever you have people who really don't understand doctrine and they're introducing new extra-biblical themes into their preaching, there's just really no telling where it's going to go.
Well, and I think that was a problem when the merger happened in 1953. See, Earn Baxter and the ECOP, they were Trinitarians, and the ACOP started out as a Jesus-only oneness group. So now Earn Baxter introduced a whole lot of theology that we didn't have before. And going back to what Charles said, the ACOP treated it as the big tent. We accepted anybody, doctrine, schmoctrine, anything goes. And the official stamps of that would be, or the official stance would be, theological diversity. Well, I'm sorry, John. There's a lot of diverse theology that is nowhere close to Christianity.
That's another thing that really was difficult for me to understand. And I came through it partially through the Urshan research. I spoke with another Pentecostal minister who wishes to be unnamed, but he was at one of the meetings that Branham was apparently in, or his father was in one of the meetings Branham was in, and his father walked away and said, I'll never go back to this. We're Oneness Pentecostal, and Branham just baptized that person in Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, which is totally against the Oneness Pentecostals. They see it as a unforgivable sin. It's a crime if you do this. So there was this strong division, but Branham is historically known as modalist or oneness, having denounced the Trinitarian doctrine. But yet you find him praying to the Trinity in some churches and then condemning anybody who does as having the mark of the beast in other churches. So there's this wide variety of people. It didn't really click until I found the very first issue of The Voice of Healing when it started, even in the title, it says an interdenominational publication. What it's trying to say is we don't care what you believe as long as you're joining our movement. You can believe the black or the white or the gray or anything in between. We don't care. Just join our movement. Once everybody joined, then it turned into a very black or white cultish mentality.
How I see that today, or how I describe that today, is just slap a Jesus Christ sticker on it and call it a Christian.
Yeah. The thing of it is that what they're preaching in many cases has no resemblance to the gospel, and they'll call it the gospel. And it really goes back to what I said before. When you have people who aren't trained, some of them are so untrained they've never even heard what the gospel of Jesus Christ is. So they don't understand it, but they're using the word gospel. So when you stamp that label on it, we're preaching Jesus and we're preaching the gospel. When people hear those labels, they think, oh, this must be a Christian gospel. It's just, sadly, in some cases, it's not even close.
I would have to imagine that my original ACOP family would be very surprised of how much influence William Branham and the Latter Rain has actually had on us via Ern Baxter. I see that currently in today's ACOP world, they bring in people like Cindy Jacobs and Mike Bickle and pastors from the Vineyard movement. And I'm thinking, oh, good grief, what is going on here? And it makes me wonder, do they even know our history to be able to associate? Because I'm almost 60, John. My peer group doesn't remember this. My parents and my husband's parents, they're in that 90-year-old age bracket. They don't remember it. Well, I shouldn't say that exactly. My father-in-law does remember William Branham. Because in 1947, when William Branham came to Calgary, he came to our church, and my father was in that, in one of those services during that week that Branham was here. And I first listened to your podcast, and I listened to Charles, and he said, and you know, John, and the cancer fell right off her head. And I kind of laughed, and it's like, oh, that kind of reminds me of that Jim Carrey movie, Man on the Moon, where Andy Kaufman was terminally ill and goes to Hawaii to a faith healer, and he sees the faith healer palm the chicken gizzards into his hand before the ceremony, and Jim Carrey as Andy Kaufman laughed because he knew it was just a con, and that was his game. That was his comedic game. Mm-hmm. So after listening to your podcast, I went and spoke to my father-in-law. Have you heard of William Branham? Oh yes, I was 12 years old in that service, and my mother got healed, and the cancer fell right off her head. Mm-hmm. He quoted Pastor Charles. I couldn't believe it.
I grew up with those same stories. And what's funny is when I was in the cult of Branham, I had some knowledge of other cults. And I was aware of Jim Jones and People's Temple, obviously. They were the number one most infamous. But I knew that Jones did the gizzard trick. That's something that's in many of the documentaries. He's dropping chicken gizzards and they're believing that it's, you know, Almighty God. I never put two and two. When my grandfather would say that the tumor just fell right out on the platform and everybody could see it, I never really thought about the seriousness of this. And I'm laughing really at the absurdity, because Branham was doing the same thing. There's no question about it. Even if you understand medical science, how a tumor works, that it's not even possible for this to happen. But that's what the people were doing, and they were dropping animal parts. For me, once that hit me, the scope of how insidious that was, I started to just be, I was sick to my stomach, because these people were tricking other people in the crowds to believe that they had some magic gift that they're claiming was of God. And tricks like this were being used, and that's just one of many different tricks that's being used.
It was Pastor Kosick was pastoring the downtown church. And when William Branham came through, Pastor Kosick also was in the UPCI, because he was in Ontario at the outlet camp in the early 40s. That's where my parents remember him from. Pastor Kosick was my husband's pastor when he was a small child in the early 70s. And it was Pastor Kosick in 1957, where Kosick has invited Ern Baxter to the ACOP Fall Bible Conference as the Bible teacher.
Like I said earlier, it's this unending labyrinth of connections, and each one you go down, you find that Branham's not really the only epicenter. You'll follow a connection, and then there'll be another explosion into another epicenter, and that will splinter off into all of these different groups. It is like a cancer. It's like a tumor. It grows, it metastasizes, it spreads, it does it again, and it just keeps repeating. And for me, it really goes back to this. The Bible says, by the fruits you'll know them. Well, if I'm examining the fruits of this movement, all I see are something that looks good, looks clean, using the name Jesus, using the word gospel, but it isn't quite the same Jesus, and it isn't quite the same gospel. It is something just a little bit different.
Where this gets confusing, John, is doctrines are introduced, they're taken out, they're rejected, but they come back a little bit. And so, are they rejected? Do we really teach this? Do we not? I saw in a 1967 End Times Messenger magazine where at the ACOP conference that they're teaching the pastors manifest sons of God. Mm-hmm. So this 1967. Mm-hmm. And they're teaching this to the pastors. And I saw a picture, and mom's cousin, who's a pastor, is sitting in this conference. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how much this has actually influenced us. And then we've been in my research in 1974, same magazine, we have someone calling out the Man-Child Company as heresy. So we're teaching it, but we're saying no, but we're teaching it, but we're saying no. Mm-hmm. So it's very confusing, John. Very confusing. And how I look at this is the two things necessary. You needed the fivefold ministry and to get to the manifest sons, or mature sonship, I guess is what they call it nowadays, because you talk manifest sons of God and people don't even look at you. You say mature sonship. Oh, well, that piques everybody's interest because they know about mature sonship. You're going to be, I guess we have different tiers of anointings now. We're not just anointed with the Holy Spirit as a Christian. Now we've got different tiers of anointing, different specialties. So that's crazy. Now, my husband, in Bible school, for sure they taught fivefold ministry, but they didn't teach it as current day offices. There was no capital A apostle, no capital anything. In fact, they said the apostle didn't exist. So really, it was only a fourfold ministry that they taught.
The thing of it is, You almost can't have the movement unless you go back to Manifested Sons. Because if you go back to the history of the Sharon Orphanage, that's what they were trying to produce. They were trying to evolve Christianity into a new creature that wasn't quite the same creature. And in fact, many of the circles use that language. We want to become a new creature in God. Well, when they say that, they don't take the biblical meaning of this. They're adding all of these things to what this new creature is. And in the end, no matter what label they put on it, it's always the manifested Son of God. That's why you mentioned Mike Bickle. Paul Kane was big in this. Paul Kane was one of William Branham's proteges, I guess you would call him. He and Mike Bickle and Bob Jones basically recreated this idea that we're going to create a new Sharon Orphanage. We're going to call it International House of Prayer in Kansas City. And we're going to resurrect the Manifested Sons of God theme with prayer 24/7, all of the things that I think the Sharon Orphanage would have evolved into had they survived the Assemblies of God split that happened. But what they were trying to recreate was nothing new. They were just recreating something old.
I keep an eye on my home church in Ontario and my home church here in Calgary, because they are such love places by me. They will always be my home church, and the people there will always be my friends and family. So I always check on what's going on. And I've heard some different language that I said to my husband, this isn't the same church that we grew up in. This is not the same gospel that we loved and heard. New words, like I said, anointed. Well, I was always taught everybody is anointed, so there wasn't anybody extra anointed. And another phrase that I heard recently was covenant relationship. Mm-hmm. And my definition of that is, I've got the dirt on you and you got the dirt on me, and we're going to support each other no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. And basically, it's the same thing as the shepherding movement, but in reverse. Instead of having the hierarchy with five guys at the top, we're going to have smaller hierarchies, but we're still going to have the dirt on each other.
Another word that I heard in my church was, we want you to experience Jesus. And I don't even understand what these words mean anymore, John. Experience Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's just something.
Well, it's basically turned into a carnival of sorts with these different entertainment rides that you can go down. You can experience Jesus in this entertaining way. And for me, it really goes back to what I said earlier. If you don't know the gospel, you're preaching a different gospel. You, by human nature, are going to create one that is more entertaining to the crowd so that it brings more people in. And then it becomes a gospel of entertainment. And the question becomes, is that the same gospel? Can it even be the same gospel?
When my husband finished Bible school and came back to Calgary, he noticed that our church really changed. And I asked him in what way, and the way he described it, he just made it sound like it was a normal UPCI service, but to them that was very fanatical compared to what we were used to. It was very orderly, and nothing went crazy. But my husband came back from Bible school, he said that something had changed, and he was concerned that they were looking for experiences now. And this is I would say 1996, where my husband was leading worship at a POC First Alliance church, and John Arnott from Catch the Fire had come, and he had said, well, let's hurry up and get through the sermon so we can get to the fun stuff. So I guess that must have been the experience, the fun stuff that they were looking for.
And there's the ties to the charismatic movement through John Arnott, who was at the Toronto Blessing. So many different spiderwebs of connections. All of them seem to be converging in various places in the timeline. If you could give some advice to people who are in this type of movement, what advice would you give them?
I would say, learn your history. Just learn your history. And once you can put your own history together, then things will start making more sense. And the only other thing that I can suggest is the PAOC rejected Branham. The Assemblies of God rejected Branham. We've got different documentation out of the ACOP, wishy-washy, but still rejecting him. We've got the Assemblies of God rejecting the shepherding movement. And my advice would be, can all of these places be wrong? They experienced it, the latter rain. They experienced the latter rain at the time that it was happening. So we have to take their authority on it, because this is 75 years later. We don't know it.
And it's interesting. I recently put a podcast out just going through the different things that the Assemblies of God said about the latter rain movement when they denounced it. And it's so interesting if you compare it to what charismatic Christianity today has become. It is the very thing that Assemblies of God back in 1949 had denounced. But yet so many people have forgotten that history that they're starting to recreate that history, not knowing that they're recreating the error that was already condemned long ago. So many different interesting points in history. And I think some of your research, when I get the chance to go deeper into what you've sent me, I think it's going to explode into a new world of different labyrinths that I can go down and connect different Pentecostal histories to the same movement. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, John, for having me on. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information or to share your story, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.